F2. Number 13B.
And man, after reflection of life, must reflect exactly the same quality as God, not the opposite. Life is giving, the opposite is taking. So we haven't touched yet the true sense of life if we feel that God is there, that life is there to be abundantly blessing us, to abundantly give us, and the job of man is how to get a lot of it. We haven't touched life then. We have only then acknowledged the worst sense of life, that life is the Father. But we haven't touched then the Christianity sense of life, which is a reflection, which says, all right, then man is fathering the universe too. If man is the reflection of God, then man must do the same as God does. Well, if God does father the universe, then man, as the reflection of life, fathers the universe. Can you see that? And we can only evolve that in our consciousness by first going to the word of life, by seeing first that life is abundant, then through our conscious unity see that that life has a Christ, therefore that abundance is constantly flowing and flowing and flowing to the universe, no lack in it. Then we can go to the sense of life from the standpoint of Christianity and see, well, then I have that idea in consciousness, therefore my consciousness, no other consciousness, but that consciousness which says, I give out, I give out, I give out, I give out. I support, I provide. And then when you come to the point of science and you regard life as science, then you can't even have something somewhere in the universe which has lack and which needs to be provided. Then the universe is full of the knowledge of God as the water covers the sea. There is in that universe not one single idea which is not full and fulfilled. That's what he tells them. That's the victory he wins with the Corinthians. That he wins them over to let go of their poor sense of being poor and others being poor. Yeah. He says of the church in Macedonia, the troubles they have been through have tried them very hard. Yet in all this they have been so exuberantly, you say exuberantly? Exuberantly. So he says to the people in Macedonia, he says, yet in all this they have been so exuberantly happy that from the depths of their poverty they have shown themselves lavishly open-handed. He turned them, you see, he won a triumph from a sense of lack to a sense of abundance. He made them all rich. Then we go to the throne of truth, and there he wins a victory in men, that they are set for unity with truth, that empowers men to be victorious, to have dominion, despite of human weaknesses, and endows us with Christ's fullness of dominion. See, that's what we have to see. If we go out from that standpoint, where we are aware within ourselves that not everything is as it should be, that we have shortcomings to the right and to the left, that so much is still lacking with us, and everyone has that feeling. And then one usually makes a mistake and says, well, so I can't do much more. Until I have got rid of these weaknesses, I can't be of a greater help to the world. I can't demonstrate more. I can't, be a help. Well, Paul says that's not true. He says, whatever our weaknesses still may be, that doesn't matter. We can demonstrate the Christ in spite of our weaknesses. The Christ law is not dependent on how weak we are and how many shortcomings we have. If that wouldn't be so, there would never be a progress, because we would have a certain sum of weaknesses and say, well, as long as they are here, we can't go forward. Well, then we would just halt and remain always at the same level. But the Christ is a Savior. He's much more tender and much bigger than our weaknesses. And really and truly, I think, all what we do in a divine way, all what we do in a progressive divine way, we usually always do in spite of ourselves. In spite of ourselves, not with the help of ourselves. If we do it with the help of ourselves, we are Jews. That's the work of the law. That would be the work of the law. The Christ does it by grace. By grace. It does it by the very fact that God's hand is still stretched out. By the very fact that no matter what shortcomings, what weaknesses we have, there is the remnant within us which he has shown, the remnant within us which says, I can go to the Father. Each one of us can go to the Father. Each one of us can go to the truth. To which truth? To what part of truth? To the whole truth. To the whole truth. Each one of us can do that in spite of our shortcomings. And so through our consciousness and our unity with truth, we can win a victory over our mortal manhood. And that's the only way how we win the victory over our weaknesses. That's why in this, and only in this epistle, Paul boasts himself so much of what he has accomplished. And I know quite a lot of students of the Bible who are so cross with Paul because he boasts himself so much. They would rather like him to be meek instead of boasting. And they just don't like Paul. Well, if we read Paul properly, we see the beauty of it, because he boasts himself of what he has done. And after he has boasted, you say he boasted himself of all what he has done, he says, I have done that in spite of me. I have done it with God. And that's the boasting we are allowed to do. If a man must boast, he says, let him boast in the Lord. He does it because we can boast ourselves that there is such a wonderful law which says you can be one with truth, with God, and with the whole of God. He says, most gladly therefore will I rather glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. He boasts about his infirmities, says, all right, all that I did in spite of me. The old man in me couldn't stop it. The stinker in me couldn't stop it. He did it in spite of himself. Therefore I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in necessities, in persecutions, in distress for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong. That's what we should experience. That we see, oh, there is such a stinker in me, and it just doesn't want to go away from me. And it just sticks on to me and sticks on to me. And if we are not Christianly inspired, we say, well, then there is no more any way out. I can't go any further. But if we see the Christ law as grace, independent of the stinker in me, then I begin to see, well, if I'm weak, that's all right. But that makes me rely even the more on truth. That makes me to rely even more on the power of truth. if one feels, oh, I'm a jolly good fellow, and I never do anything right, we will never be pushed to rely so much, so strongly, so consecratedly on God. Only when one feels that the human church lets you down to the right and to the left, that's a wonderful moment. And you say, all right, I go to that which never lets me down. I go to truth. The truth about me. The wholeness about me. And that's what Paul did. And that's what he boasted about. That when he is weak, he was strong. That the human, he showed that the human is just not an element in our way, divine what? God what? That the human in us can neither help us on that way nor hinder us on that way. We can do neither. That's wonderful. See how grace works. Then he goes to the last subject of love and shows that through our steadfast unity with love, that love empowers us to triumph over all enmity and helps us to find the peace of God within us. The counterfeit of love is enmity, strife, etc. And here he has to deal with an argument which he encounters everywhere where he went, namely that people said, Paul, you are no good. If you are a bit good, you are a bit good, but not really good, because you are not a disciple of Jesus. You haven't got it from Jesus. So you are only a half a portion. And what you say is only the half truth. And he had to find his way through that. And he found his way through all this enmity that was brought to him, that he was not a genuine apostle, that he was a fraud, and so on, that he was a failure, that everything he did, he had, wherever he went, he had to encounter defeat. So people said, you are a failure. You are not a real apostle of Christ. And through his sense of love, which just has the idea of God in front of one's consciousness, love never losing sight of loveliness. With that unity, he won the battle. Step by step, he won the battle. Well, who has spread Christianity? Paul. It wasn't James. It was Paul. The one disciple wasn't taught by Jesus. Just as usually those who have been hanging around Mrs. Eddy's home, afterwards, they didn't do much good. It was usually people who haven't been hanging around Mrs. Eddy who really did the job. And so it was then. Seems that history repeats itself over and over. He just had to stick to the idea. He couldn't rely on anything personal. He couldn't say, well, here I'm coming. I knew Jesus. And Jesus himself sent me this, and Jesus himself sent me that. Relying on a person, he just had to rely on his unity with God. Every step of the way, nothing was spared for him. And so he won them over. The signs of an apostle were wrought among you in all patience, in signs and wonders and mighty deeds. So the God of love and peace shall be with you. And that's the end of the epistle. So can you see, if we just quickly summarize it, what he has shown in the epistle, that he was always showing through seven stages the same law, always showing the same law, that if we really stand through hell and high water, really, with truth, with God, and just don't give in, just let no doubt, no fear, no anxiety come into our consciousness. That very consciousness has in itself the power of Christianity, namely the power of triumph, the power of victory. In mind, he said, that if we are steadfastly abiding in the divine mind, that that will win a victory over troubled mind, over distressed mind. And with the victory, that a comforting atmosphere is coming on us. In spirit, he showed that if we stay steadfast in our conscious unity with spirit and all what spirit as God means, that that really triumphs over every material sense, of every literal sense of being, of a fleshly sense of being, and leads us on triumphantly from glory to glory. Then he showed in soul that if we stay steadfast in our unity with soul, that this has in itself the power, so that all that is soul-like is triumphing within us over everything that is not soul-like. It's triumphing over selfishness, over corporeality, over egotism, over bondage, and brings us a victory of the incorporeal, of the selfless, of a selfless sense. Then in principle he showed that as he did stick to what he knew to be principle, and being faithful through thick and thin to that which is principle-like, that that would win the triumph over everything in the human, would win a triumph over all worldly opinions, worldly interpretations, and what the world says, and what people says, and what our personal opinions, and so on. Then in life he showed that through his steadfastness in holding to the true fact that we are one with life and the abundance of life, that that wins a victory within ourselves, which wins a victory of a sense that there can be any lack in me and in the others, and so establishes within us a sense of giving, of helping, of having a constructive fatherhood sense. Then in truth, he shows that our conscious, constant communion with all that what truth means, with the true sense of man, with the immortal sense of man, that that wins a victory over our weaknesses, over everything which is not man-like in us, and wins a victory so that the true man dominates within us. And then in love he shows that if we have a constant capacity always to know and be one with love, that that is such a power within us that it wins a victory over every adversary, over every enmity, within, enmity within, and enmity without, adversity within, and adversity without, where we find our peace within and without. So that's 2 Corinthians. And you can see how very much different it is from 1 Corinthians. Now, the standpoint of this epistle is the word as Christianity. See, it is still our conscious unity, our faith in God, which empowers us and gives us the power of God to do what? Christianity. Namely, to triumph over the worldly sense of things. The counterfeit of Christianity is the worldly sense of things, the material sense of things, the mortal sense of things. And so Christianity is that which wins a victory over that mortal sense of things. Can you see the standpoint of 2 Corinthians? And you can see, to repeat it, the problem which is handled here, the general problem, that problem which every one of us has to handle, a problem to which every one of us has to be a practitioner. Namely, it is that problem, that question, where each one says, well, I love signs and I see what signs is, I see what God is, that's the only thing I see is worthwhile. Why don't I progress? Why don't I have more victory? Why don't I have more triumph? The key is, are you putting everything into your one unity with God? It's the Christianity sense, the C, ABC in the chart. Have you that complete trust and complete loyalty, faithfulness? Do we give our all into that unity with God or not? If we do, as Paul showed us, then we have the power of Christianity within us that wins the victory. So, let's take the law on page 87. I tried to pin down and reduce that law to elements. I just feel it's the easiest way at the beginning to become truly aware what this law is. You see, it always begins first with man's relationship to God. See, Christianity is in every way always the reciprocal relationship of man to God and God to man. So it starts by our relationship to God. So if we are steadfast and abide in our conscious unity with God, then this does something to us. Then God empowers us to triumph over all that is unlike God. And so we obtain a divine compensation. That divine compensation is really that the idea of God then prevails. So you see, if we take this law and elaborated by replacing the term God, that really doesn't mean very much, and replace it by mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, and even go further and replace mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love by the ideas of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, we can infinitely elaborate that law of 2 Corinthians and have it really adapted to our age. Is that clear? I mean, really, truly, don't be shocked. I'm not shocked if you say no. All I want to do this week is just this point. Because if you get this point, you are independent of me, and even independent of the epistles. The embroidering of the epistles, so illustration can go, and you just have the structure of the epistle. So, let's go once through the text I have here. See, just to help you, as when the summer school is over, and you are left alone, perhaps without me, perhaps even isolated somewhere without friends to exchange you, that you know what's all about with these laws. So I said in mind, see, I take now this law above, and instead of saying God, I say mind. So by steadfastly abiding in our conscious unity with mind, we receive the power. I could also have said God empowers us. We receive the power to triumph over that which is unlike mine. And I just have taken one example. I could have taken any counterfeit of mine. We triumph over inaction, overaction, irritated action, irregular action, so that as a compensation, really, only harmonious and rhythmic action prevails. See, I have now just taken the idea action. Is that clear? I have elaborated now this law of Paul in mind only with the idea of action. Is that clear? You see, therefore, we may be, say, faced with a condition of inaction, or overaction, or irritated action, or anything like that, a counterfeit of true action. And it may seem big, it may irritate us, and we may have a feeling like all outside our fightings and inside our fears about these actions. So the problem here is irritated action. Well, what can we do about it, you see? And Paul says, well, the law that in its generality handles it is that you look away from action, put away that claim of irritated action or overaction or that, put it away, you start right. You start and commune with the one mind. It's the mind of God. And that mind of God is the only mind and the only action. And as we are constantly, steadfastly, lovingly, unflinchingly, unwaveringly holding on in this wonderful unity with mind as the only action, then we can know that that calls the law of Christ into action, which says that empowers something in you to triumph over inaction, irritated action, diseased action, so that only that action of mind prevails in you. That is rhythmic action, that is harmonious action, healthy action, sinless action, balanced action. You see? So, in that way, now, let's make a little exercise. Your problem may not be action or irritated action. Your problem may be something very different. Say, you will be faced with, let me say, with ignorance.